All right, pray with me, please. What wondrous love is this, oh my soul, that we get to grow in the knowledge of you, lets us grow to know a love that is so amazing and it is so divine that it demands our life, our soul, our all, to bear fruit in the good works and to have a knowledge of your will and to live a life worthy of our Lord and to please you in every way. This is our prayer, O Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, Paul liked to pray, don't you think? And he could pray a long prayer. You know, this prayer is a one-sentence prayer that starts in verse 9 and goes all the way to verse 12. He could keep it going. A grammar teacher would have a lot of fun with him. But you know, when I really sat in that prayer and I thought about what the essence of it was, which was that we would so know God, that we would live lives that are worthy of him. And listen, that we would please him in every way, Paul said. So here's my question. How confident are you that you please him? How confident are you that you please him in every way? We're to be rooted in that assurance. And if you don't have it, that's why you're here. These six verses are powerful because in that gym theme that we've got going on, if you're not confident that God is pleased with you, if you have Jesus Christ living in you, that's too heavy of a weight for you to carry. It's certainly too heavy for you to press on and surely not to be able to press on in confidence. And so we need to know that God is pleased with us through his son, Jesus Christ. And the first half of Colossians 1, I noticed there's a botanical sort of horticultural theme going on where Paul uses the visual of fruit and he uses the word growing a lot. Last week in verse 6, he said that the gospel is bearing fruit and growing throughout the world. And of course it had. It had started in Jerusalem and it had spread throughout Judea. And the seed of the gospel had been scattered past Samaria and all the way in Rome now. Paul's in prison and he's scattering the seed of the gospel. And so indeed the gospel was bearing fruit and growing. But, and by the way, when you think about that, I really want us to get in our minds from the start that the gospel is ultimately about the seed of Jesus Christ. And it's taught through the seed of his word. Paul refers to that seed as the imperishable. Did I say Paul? I meant Peter. Peter refers to the seed as the imperishable seed, this living and enduring seed that is in us when we're born again. And this was the seed, by the way, that was promised all the way back in Genesis 3:15, right after they had fallen short and sinned, Adam and Eve. And that they were promised the seed of the woman, the seed of a woman, the virgin, that would crush this seed, a little, what we think a seed is tiny, this seed, Jesus Christ, would crush the head of the serpent, crush Satan. And so, and even Jesus taught about a seed, referring to himself, do you remember? He said, unless that kernel of wheat, that seed, falls into the ground and is buried and dies there, it will just remain one single seed. But if it dies, it will produce many seeds. And so the gospel was bearing fruit. But then we get to verse 10, and Paul is praying that the Colossians will bear fruit and that they will grow in the knowledge of God. And at the very thrust of what he's saying is so that you will live lives worthy of him and please him in every way. There's that word pleasing again. So come along with me as we dig into learning about our first division, which is growing to please him. And that's verses 9 through 11. And then knowing I please him in verses 12 through 14. See, we're going to grow to please him. Listen, we practiced for so long before Jesus Christ came into us. We practiced doing everything that didn't please him. So once we're saved, we're still on that journey of growing, of it being nurtured to live lives that grow to please him. But because of what the seed did, Jesus Christ, in the second division, where he redeemed us, we can know that we please God. Okay, so that's where we're going. So let's start out in our first division, growing to please him. And in verse 9, I'm just going to read the very first part of verse 9. It says, "For this reason, since the day we heard about you," Paul's referring to hearing about the Colossians, "we have not stopped praying for you." So Paul, as we learned, has not personally met the Colossians yet. He had heard about them from Epaphras. And that seed of the gospel that had first begun in Paul got then planted in Epaphras. Somehow he heard about the gospel through Paul. And then Epaphras had gone back to Colossae, and he had cast the seed of the gospel there. And now there was a little church, the Colossian church. But girls, where there are seeds, there are weeds. And there were weeds sprouting up in this church, and they were called the false teachers. And in specific, they were the Gnostics. And they were just coming on in and trying to mess with this sprouting baby Colossian church. And any good gardener knows you can't just plant a seed and then think you've done your work. You've got to tend to it. It's hard work. And so Epaphras, to be able to be a good gardener of this church, he went on a hard work journey, at least 1,200 miles, to go visit Paul and to gather his wisdom of godly wisdom on how do I coach them through all this false teaching that's going on. And so you could say that it was on his heart that the Colossians would grow to please God. It was on Epaphras' heart that they would grow to please him. But listen, anybody here feeling a weight of responsibility? Do you see that the weight of responsibility on Epaphras was growing him too? You got maybe a growing responsibility in a ministry. Do you know that's part of God growing you more? It grew him because he went and hung with Paul, and then this mature believer poured into him, and the Spirit was giving him wisdom and understanding. And so responsibility grows us. And it was growing Epaphras. Well, since the day that Paul and Timothy had heard about the Colossae church, they had not stopped praying for them. And I think one of the dearest things that comes once the seed of the gospel is planted in you and me is that we realize we're with a field of believers. They're everywhere around us. And they become our team we. You've got team we's right there at your table. And they were the epitome of a team we, because they were nonstop prayer warriors praying for people they hadn't even met yet. That was growing in a way that pleases God. You know, I will never forget our oldest child when she was 2 years old. She fell out of our apartment third story window and was in a coma for a while. And years later, I bumped into this elderly couple. And when we connected the dots, that they said, "Oh, you're the mother of the daughter that fell out of the window. Do you know we could not stop praying for you all? We couldn't stop praying for her. How did she fare?" Years later, people praying for my daughter that I didn't even know. That's team we. That's part of being a believer. It's so fantastic. And that, when we do that, we're growing to please God. Are your prayers just all about you? Or do they include even praying for people you don't yet know, you've just heard about, and you know they have a need? Well, we get to eavesdrop on Paul's prayer life. And I think if we were to understand the weightiness, the power, the effectiveness that comes with prayer, we'd never get off our knees. See, we just don't get it. But Paul did, and we get to eavesdrop on his prayer, which I say is, I call it, it's just loaded with eternally weighted prayer requests. He's thinking about the eternal, because after all, he is on death row. He knows what really counts to pray for at this point. So let's let his prayer fertilize and grow our prayer life as we read it together. The middle of verse 9, he says, "We continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of his will through all the wisdom and the understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God and being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience." Now, isn't that exactly the kind of prayers you pray? Doesn't it mirror exactly how you pray for your children or your loved ones or whomever? Don't hear me wrong. There's nothing wrong with praying about the smaller things, you know, the job situation, the housing situation, the college, you know, acceptance letters, the SATs, the, you know, your aunt's back surgery. Nothing wrong with it. But there is everything right with praying increasingly, eternally weighted prayer requests, just like Paul. That long one-sentence prayer, honestly, if I never prayed anything else than that for my loved ones, it covers it. Why not take that and begin praying these verses for the people you really love? Well, a couple of things worth noting is that in this prayer, Paul is doing this really funky thing. The Gnostics, if you take the Greek word in gnosis, in the Gnostics, these false teachers, it means knowledge. And he is, these false teachers, by the way, thought they had just such spiritual knowledge. They were praying, P-R-E-Y, on the Colossian church with all of their new spiritual ideas. Oh, they didn't chuck out Jesus. They didn't deny Jesus. They just didn't give Jesus center stage. They didn't give him the supremacy and the preeminence that he was worthy of. It was Jesus plus, which you and I have learned equals nothing. And so it's weed teaching, if you will. Weed teaching is, you know, to teach all these spiritual ideas and just dabble in a little bit of Jesus. And so what does Paul do? He prays using those exact words, knowledge. And he prays for that they would have the knowledge, the gnosis of his will, and that they would grow in the gnosis, the Gnosticness of God, that they would know real knowledge, not the false knowledge that was being taught to them. And he continually prayed this for them. And so he prays for the knowledge of God's will for the Colossians. Have you ever said, "I just wish I knew what God's will was for this particular situation or decision"? Well, may I say to you that in the perfect garden, they knew what God's will was. They just didn't do God's will. And sometimes we know God's will. It's just hard to do God's will. And so it's not an automatic that just because we would know God's will that we would do God's will. Adam and Eve teach us that well. So I think it's a wise thing to pray, and I learned this from Wetherill Johnson, to pray that prayer, "Lord, I am willing to be made willing to do your will." To realize that it's just not an automatic in us, even if we knew his will. And sometimes he doesn't even reveal his will because he knows we wouldn't do his will. So are we willing to be made willing to do his will? I think the other pitfall about knowing his will is we can move into wanting to know his will more than wanting to simply know him. Good question to ask yourself is, why do you want to know his will? Is it so that you can live a life that makes you feel worthy? That you're pleasing yourself in every way because finally you have purpose and passion? Or is it so that you will live a life worthy of the Lord and pleasing him in every way? You know, recently, and I asked Haley permission to tell this story, but a really good friend of hers came out from Nashville to visit her for the weekend. And I noticed she was so full when her friend left. And I asked her why. I said, what is it about Maggie? And she said, "You know, Mom, most of my Christian friends love to talk about what they want to do for God. They love to talk about their gift sets and their passions and what they want to do for God. They get passionate about it. But she said, when I'm with Maggie, she just loves talking about God. She just loves talking about what God has done for her. God is her passion. God is her purpose. And she said, it's just so refreshing. And I think we can sometimes get so into God's will and forget it's really about knowing him. And in the knowing of him, now it's not mutually exclusive. In fact, Paul combines them together here. He says in verse, prays for the knowledge of his will in verse 9, but then he prays for the growing in the knowledge of God in verse 10. So they're organic. They go together. They're connected. That as we grow in knowing him, we actually grow in knowing his will. And of course, that pleases God. I think we just need to never forget that God is a bridegroom. He's a lover. And he wants to be wanted for just him, not for what we can do for him or to find purpose or to use our passions. It's him. And when we get to know him, ironically, organically, he then begins to grow our knowledge of his will for our lives. So without us even realizing it, we're doing his will. If we're saturated in his love, I put this at the bottom of your hand up. If you're saturated in his love, he is going to situate you in his will. But if you try to do it the other way around, it just doesn't work. I was thinking of Baxter, our son, who just got engaged the end of January. They're getting married in May. Yes, it's a quick one. We have a wedding and it's happening in my hometown. But I was thinking about Baxter as a bridegroom. He is so saturated with love for Margaret that he is so situated right now in how to please her. You see, he knows her will because he knows her. He knows her dreams for her career. He knows her dreams to be a mom. He knows her hobbies. He knows what she likes to try. Listen, he knows she loves to dance. And this boy who you couldn't get on a dance floor until he met her is taking dance lessons. He's doing her will. Why? Because he's been saturated with love for her. And the more you love your Lord for him, the more you'll know his will. And if you try to put it the other way around, it gets mighty frustrating. Growing to know the bridegroom's will unfolds as I grow to know my bridegroom's voice in his word. You see, Baxter's been listening to Margaret's words. He's been listening to her voice. He's been in her presence. And so he knows her will. And I was thinking, if you were to blindfold me and put me in a room with 50 men, and I had to pick out my husband's voice, I bet you I could. Do you know why? I've been in his presence for 35 years. I've loved him for 35 years most of the time. I always tell him, I love you all the time. I only like you some of the time. But anyway, I got to get back to preaching. where was I? Oh. But I have heard his intimate voice. I've heard his angry voice. I've heard his father's voice. I've heard the husband's voice. I've heard his surgeon's voice. I've heard the golfer's voice. I've been in his presence. I know his voice. You see, and so we got it. The Bible is full of God's voice. It's his words. And he voices his general will. Theologians call it his general will in the Bible. So the more I grow to know his voice in the Bible, the more I'm getting to know his general will, such that when I have to make a very specific decision and there isn't any 1 Julia chapter 2, verse 18 to help me know the specific will of God, I've grown to know his voice so well that I can begin to detect it in the decisions I've got to make. Oh, maybe not like 100%, whew, but as I press into him, the Spirit gives that wisdom and that understanding. And you do the next best thing that you know to do, and you trust you're being led. But I've grown to know his voice and his word, and so I'm growing to know his voice in more specific ways in my life. That's growing to please him when I do that. And so therefore, we begin bearing fruit in every good work as we're growing in the knowledge of God. When you think of Adam and Eve in that garden, they had been told to bear fruit. That was the first thing God said to them, be fruitful. But you know what? They didn't want to grow in the knowledge of God. Do you know what they wanted to do to get their knowledge? They wanted to go to some other source and grab it off the tree and eat of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. Walking with God in the garden just wasn't quick enough knowledge, I suspect. Are you willing to stay in his word, to get to know him there and to grow with him and just to love him in his word, not trying to find out all the application for your life? How about just adoring him in his word? Well, it struck me that this prayer is the antithesis of that garden. Paul is saying, Lord, yes, we want you to bear fruit in us, just like you asked Adam and Eve, but we do want to grow in the knowledge of you. We don't want to pick it from any other tree. We want it straight from you. But I was thinking, why all the analogy of this fruit for the gospel and for the Colossians? Why is this the key visual of fruit? And I was thinking, now stay with me, you got to think on this. Fruit can only be fruit because of the powerful seed within it. See, fruit doesn't bear fruit on its own. It bears fruit because there was a seed. It all comes from the seed that then grew into the root. And that root sends up the life sap. And that's how fruit happens. The fruit comes from the seed. The fruit comes from the root. And so the seed is really about powerful. So I'm learning three things about the seed, okay? First one is that it proliferates. It's into proliferation. Powerful proliferation. If you don't like that word proliferation, it's into reproducing, okay? Those seeds are DNA coded to reproduce. If you open an orange, there's a couple of seeds in there. But if every one of those get planted, then that creates how many? You know, 10, 20, 30 orange trees. But if every one of those and every orange on that tree, the seeds do their thing and they proliferate. I mean, are you going where I'm going? There can be billions of orange trees in time from one seed. And the gospel is to proliferate. The seed of Jesus Christ is to be spread, is to be proliferating. The gospel contains the seed that the whole world needs. Every nation and tribe needs the gospel seed of Jesus Christ because every human life has a destiny with death. And the seed has eternal life in it to not only keep the life going, but to give it a whole different quality of life while it's living. So that's the first thing I learn about a seed is that it proliferates powerfully. The second thing I learn about a seed is it penetrates. It has a powerful penetration. Seeds, listen, go with me. Seeds look tiny and unimpressive. Dare I say weak. It's easy, busy little seed, mustard seed. But do you know what kind of penetrating power it has? I heard it explained this way. This is such a good example. If I were to ask you what is stronger, an acorn seed or a cement slab, what would you say? You'd say the slab if you were really being honest and hadn't already thought about it. Because a seed, if I stand on it, I crush it. But if I stand on a cement slab, it bears my weight, which is stronger. But if you plant that acorn seed, and in time it grows, and it grows, it will penetrate right through the cement slab. You ever been on sidewalks where the roots are just making all the sidewalks all uneven? Listen, the seed of Jesus Christ in you has penetrating power. It changes you and me. And the gospel can change the most cement slab heart that's out there. Somebody needs to hear that about a loved one. You got to trust where the seed was planted. God can break through the cement slab of a heart. And the third thing I learn about seeds is that the seeds are about participation. Stay with me. They're about participation. A tiny seed has a DNA code to cause that plant to participate in its very nature. Example, an orange seed it wants that seed to go in the ground so that it will participate in its very nature when it grows a tree. Is it going to grow lemons or nectarines on that tree? No. Why? Because it's going to participate in the nature of the seed. It's going to be an orange tree because of the seed that's within. Okay? And so when you think that the seed is Jesus Christ, and if he's planted within you, you are going to participate in his nature. That's why you're going to grow to please him. 2 Peter 1, read it sometime, verses 3 through 4, talks about how his divine power has given us, listen, everything we need to live a godly life through our knowledge of him, to have his divine nature. And so his supernatural life is waiting to explode in you and me through the seed of Jesus Christ and the seed of his word. And we get to participate in his very nature. It's going to bud at first. We're going to have a life-changing worldview and that's budding as we're growing to please him. And we're going to trade in shallow living for the now into deeper living for things that matter for eternity. We're going to realize there's a heaven, and may I say it, there's a hell ahead. And it's going to dawn on us and change what we do with our lives. And we're going to have new freedoms budding in us so that the anxiety we keep casting back on him. And then the peace of God comes and stands guard over our hearts and minds. And we picture it so that we don't stay in the prison of panic. We're going to have freedom from chronic discontent because we've learned in Philippians that we can learn contentment when he's the content of our lives. And we're going to have freedom from hopelessness, even during hard times, because we've learned about true hope in Jesus Christ. And so we're going to be budding. We're going to begin blossoming in the way we view ourselves. The hyper echo of worth that he says we have in him. So that we don't have to listen. Somebody else isn't validating us. They're not giving us their approval. It doesn't depress us so much anymore. Your teenagers don't think you're great anymore. It's okay. God thinks you're great. Your hubby doesn't think you're great anymore. It's okay. God thinks you're great. And we blossom when we begin to get that. We're less needy of other people's validation. We're growing to please him. We are blossoming in the way we view others, not just ourselves, but the way we view others. That the fruit of the Spirit, it's a fruit of the Spirit. We don't have to produce patience. We partake of patience. It's a fruit. Fruit can't make fruit. Fruit comes back to the root. Okay. The fruit of the Spirit. We begin to have a vast love for others through that fruit of the Spirit instead of such a self-addicted self-love. You see, bearing fruit. We're bearing fruit in God-given abilities. This is all happening. But in order to bear fruit of those kind of good works that the Spirit does through us, we need to be strengthened, it says, with all power according to his glorious might. I think that's enough for you and me. So that we have great endurance and patience. Now, who in this room doesn't need great endurance and patience? I heard it at my table. And I was thinking, this is such a tender example, but it's such a powerful one. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the author Nancy Guthrie. But she lost her first daughter, Hope, just barely at 6 months old, to a very unusual syndrome. Got pregnant again, and the second child had the exact same syndrome and only lived a short while, the baby. And yet Nancy didn't just survive. She thrived. And someone said to her, you must be a very... Now, let's not put her on a pedestal. She grieved. Okay, so that's an obvious. But through it all, she was thriving. And someone said to her, you must be a very strong person. To which she said, no, the truth is I'm not strong, but I am tethered to someone who is strong. I'm tethered to the living person of Jesus Christ. I know him, and he strengthens me with his glorious might so that I can have great endurance to walk through the valley of the shadow of death of two babies I loved. And so, girls, our first truth is this. There is an organic connection between my pleasure in knowing him and also then my growing to please him. We're going to grow to please him, but there's an organic connection between my pleasure in knowing him. That's the beginning of it. I just have to find pleasure in knowing him. And as I do, then I will grow to have a life that pleases him. It's that lover paradigm, that bridegroom paradigm. So how much pleasure do you find in knowing him? How much pleasure do you have in getting to do your lesson, which is about the knowledge of him? Or is it just, oh gosh, check it off my list. What pleasure do you have? I know it's convicting, but I'm going to say it. How much pleasure do you have in the scriptures? In sermons, do you come just waiting on Sunday morning to hear him speak? How much pleasure do you have in the songs you hear about him and in the sacraments you take part of in your church? How much pleasure do you have in your sisters? How much pleasure do you have talking to him in prayer? See, there's an organic connection between my pleasure in knowing him. I get to know him in all those ways. And then in my growing to please him, they go together. I will never forget when I was sent to headquarters, BSF headquarters in San Antonio, to get what I thought was going to be my week of training to be a teaching leader. This woman who never wanted to get up in front of anybody, who'd never taught. On my last day there on a Friday, when I had to go back and teach on Wednesday, and I hadn't even started on my lesson, because I didn't know how to teach, how to write a lecture. I was waiting to be trained. On that Friday, we were given 5 minutes to meet with the executive director, Rosemary Jensen, and we were to give her our prayer request. Well, you can imagine how much we thought about how to word our prayer request. So I walk in, and she said, "How can I pray for you, Julia?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm going home." We just started this huge remodel that took 2 years. My kids are 6, 9, and 12. They're in 3 different schools. And my husband's a surgeon and can't help me with carpool, so I'm going to need carpool. God's going to have to do some carpool miracles. He's got to get me through this remodel. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I need to teach on Wednesday, and I haven't started the lesson. And you only gave me an hour and a half of training on lectures, writing. Hour and a half of training. And she looks at me, and she goes, "Do you mind if I just rip up your prayer request?" She said, "Julia, ain't no way you can do this work. There's no way unless you have an intimate connection with him. And all I want to pray for you is that you grow to know him in such an intimate way. Because if you do that, if you come to his word in the morning, not to try and figure out how to teach it and not to think about what it means for you, it's okay to get there eventually. You come to his word to know him. Find him in every verse. Find him in every page. You'll be just fine as a teaching leader. He'll be faithful." Yeah, he'll be faithful next Wednesday. That's when I had to teach. So not a knowledge of the Bible to know content, but a knowledge of the Bible to know him. So there's this organic connection between my pleasure in knowing him. Every woman wants a man to find pleasure in knowing her. Let's not treat God any differently. There's an organic connection of a pleasure of knowing him and a pleasure then we grow in pleasing him. Well, now let's go to our second division. And I am so behind in time, girls. Woo! Okay, let's read verses 12 through 14. Paul keeps going. He says, "Giving thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance." Qualified you. Joyful thanks. "To share in the inheritance of his holy people in the kingdom of light. He has rescued us from the dominion of darkness, and he has brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves." He's pleased with that Son. "And that Son is in whom we have our redemption and the forgiveness of sins." Well, if we stay with our gardening theme, we see that it is Jesus Christ who transplants us, he uproots us, if you will, out of the dominion of darkness, and he transplants us into this kingdom that's a kingdom of light. Plants don't thrive well in darkness. They love the light. And so in a sense, gardeners are rescuers because, and I know some of you out there that are gardeners, you've rescued many of your plants that were in too shady of a spot, too darkness of a spot. They were in a dominion of darkness. And they needed to be moved into a kingdom of light. And then they thrived. They came to life. Because certain plants need the sunshine to flourish. And girls, every human, not certain humans, every human needs the sunshine of his love to thrive. And the sunshine we need to know is that he's pleased with us. God is pleased with us because he's pleased with his son's rescue of us. And we've got to know that because we're still growing to please him. But we can know we please him positionally because he's pleased with his son, who is the seed that is within us. It's called the sunshine, S-O-N, shine. The shining rescue that he did for you and me. Now, the word rescue, he rescued us. If you use that word, it implies you can't rescue yourself. If somebody rescued you, you couldn't rescue yourself. You needed saving. You needed a rescue. And we need saving. We can't save ourselves out of a dominion of darkness and into the kingdom of light. And so he rescued us from a darkness into the kingdom of his son. You get that? We don't get rescued by getting into a religion. We don't get rescued by getting into a new brand of spirituality. We get rescued by being in his son and his son in us. Planted in him and he's planted in us. And so otherwise, if we think it's about religion, then it's about deeds. And so we're into deed theology instead of seed theology. He's the seed. See, a deed says something like this on either, if you're into deed theology, it goes like this. Either you're saying, oh, you don't know what I've done with my life. You just don't know. God would never want me. He wouldn't want to rescue me. I mean, I'm a big loser. I've tapped into more brands of sin than you want to know. You don't know what I've done. Or on the other hand, deed theology is, you don't know what I've done. I'm a good person. I've done lots of good works. I've given to this and I do that all the time. I'm a good person. You don't know what I've done. That's deed theology. But seed theology is Jesus saying to you, you don't know what I've done for you. You don't really get the redemption I've done for you and the forgiveness of sins. I have done a redemption rescue for you. And so what is this churchy word, redemption? It's a great rescue at a great price. A great rescue at a great price. You know, if somebody's kidnapped, you pay a great price to rescue them. And we were kidnapped. We were kidnapped in the dominion of darkness. And Jesus Christ paid a great price to get us out of that kidnapping into his kingdom. I'm trying to see what I can skip. Girls, there's several gardens in the Bible you got to know about. The first one is Eden. They needed to be uprooted out of that garden because they tried to eat their own fruit. And when they grabbed that fruit, there were seeds in that fruit. The seeds of sin that have come all the way down to you and me. So they had to be uprooted out of the kingdom of light into a dominion of darkness. But there was a second garden, Gethsemane, where Jesus Christ, the seed promised back in Genesis, watered that garden with his sweat of blood and tears as he anticipated that crushing weight. Remember, he's a seed, that crushing weight of our sin and the crushing weight of the wrath of his Father as he paid for the great price for our sin, the debt of our sin. And in that garden, he prayed, Lord, I need the knowledge of your will. Is there any other way? Is there any other way that we can rescue what happened in that garden? All the seeds of disobedience have come down through the generations. And the Father said, you have the knowledge of my will. You must go to the cross. You seed must be buried. You must die to produce seeds of all these women. And so that seed died. He died a death worthy of sinners so sinners could live a life worthy of the Lord one day. My unworthiness paid for at great price so I could have his worth. God has always been pleased with his son's worth, and that worth is inside of me now. God is pleased through Jesus Christ because of Jesus being in me. This is his beloved son who indwells me now, whom he was well pleased with. And that's what redemption is. And that's the forgiveness of sin. Did you know that when he died, I just read this in John 19, that it says, at the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new tomb. And they laid Jesus there. You know what a tomb is? It's a cement slab. The seed was buried beneath the cement slab. But the seed was powerfully penetrable. And it penetrated through that cement slab. Death could not hold him. He broke through. And up from the grave he arose. And that is proof that God was pleased with what he did to redeem you and me. And girls, the second truth is this. That's how I can know God is pleased with me. Because he is pleased with his son who rescued me. He's pleased with you. Because of Christ in you. If Christ's not in you, he's not pleased with you. You have the wrath of God on you. But if you have received Jesus Christ, you've let that seed come in, it's planted in you, you can know that he's pleased with you. Now, girls, if you've known the Lord for a while, you got to keep on knowing that he's your only rescuer. I hear people say, well, I'm working on my patience all the time. I hear believers saying that. You can't work on your patience. The fruit of the Spirit does that. You just keep pressing into him. You keep saying to him, I need you to rescue me and give me patience. You and I can't drum it up. It comes from the seed and the root. And then it becomes a fruit in our lives. And so all of my anxieties, all of my giving into temptations, all of my self-loathing after I've given into my temptations are rooted in my failing to believe that Jesus Christ can rescue me in any situation, in any moment. I've got to cry out to him. I got to pray, rescue me, rescue my loved one. But when I do fail, oh, somebody needs to hear this. You don't go to shame. You go to knowing that God the Father is pleased with you positionally. You don't have to go to self-loathing. He's not pleased with your weedy living, but he's pleased with you because of the seed within you, his son. He's pleased with his son, and therefore he's pleased with you. Do you know that God is pleased with you? Do you know it? You can be confident of it. And let's just all say amen together. Amen. Amen.